information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
To border
and it shows.
The law.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Attention, attention, attention. American forces are here to help. Please remain calm. We will not tolerate any civil disobedience. Well, let's get it. It's Media Monarchy, episode 78. It's June 6, 2008. My name's James Evan Pilato, coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority and the Revere Radio Network. MediaMonarchy.com is the site for all the important news for you. This week, it's Barack and Billary and Brzezinski and Bilderberg. We, of course, the 40th anniversary of the assassination of RFK. We got 9/11 tribunals, martyrs. We got FEMA, the Freemasons, Soros, and Oregon cops. NAU, OTB, and AIPAC. We got the Mad Hoax, War Games, Food and Drug. Tons and tons more. It's episode 78. It's June 6th, 2008. It's MediaMonarchy.com.
People have to work. Oh, I bet that this isn't good.
All right, my friends, is this as good as it gets? That's a band called Gene, going back a few years from their record Revelations. And that's the question we're asking this week on MediaMonarchy.com. Is this as good as it gets? Is this the best we can do with the folks we got up running for the presidential selection? I don't think so. And we're going to get into it. But first, let's take care of some business. My name's James. I am your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. This is episode 78. It's June 6th, 2008. Coming to you, as always, live every Friday morning at 10 Pacific Time on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and Sunday nights at 7 Eastern Time on revereradionetwork.com. You can also hit me up, of course, on MySpace and Dig and YouTube and Yahoo with Media Monarchy as your keyword, and get the podcast almost anytime, iTunes, radioforall.net, and archive.org. So, late last night, as I was trying to get the show together, this little bit of news broke out, and of course it's all over the place now, but it was interesting to see it spilling out at 2:20 or so in the morning. That may have been Eastern time, I'm not sure, I'm a little fuzzy. Obama and Hillary having a little secret meeting, a little secret get-together in D.C. So, amazingly enough, the first to break this was our good friends at Fox News. And so when I initially linked to the story, I forgot to actually screen grab it or save it as a PDF, because it changed out from under me when I checked it. There are reports that they met at Dianne Feinstein's house. There are reports that they met at Hillary's D.C. house. But there are no actual confirmations coming of where they actually met. The speculation, of course, that we'll get into is whether or not they had a little Bilderberg meeting. Of course, the annual Bilderberg meeting where all your favorite globalists and elitists get together to decide policy for the next year. You know, they'll talk about oil going up to 200, or they'll talk about when exactly they're going to attack Iran or Iraq, and who exactly they'd like to choose for your presidential selection running mates, and perhaps even the top tickets and more. So, from Fox News, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama met Thursday night at an unannounced location in Washington, D.C., senior Democratic sources tell Fox News. There are no details yet on the agenda of the meeting or who sought it, but sources tell Fox News it was taking place at the D.C. home of California Senator Dianne Feinstein, a prominent Clinton supporter. It isn't clear whether the meeting has concluded, so I posted that up as quickly as I could, like I said, late last night. There are lots of updates. However, let's get to the pertinent question. Were Hillary and Obama having a little secret Bilderberg rendezvous? Let's jump to Paul Joseph Watson. And again, we don't know any of this for sure, but let's see. According to news reports, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton went out of their way to hold their long-awaited private meeting in a very specific location, not at Hillary's mansion in Washington, but in Northern Virginia, which also just happens to be the scene of the 2008 Bilderberg meeting going on right now. Obama spokesman Robert Gibbs told the media that Obama and Clinton held a private meeting last night, but he refused to disclose where it had taken place, except that it was not at Clinton's home in Washington. It has been widely reported. Hillary campaign managers also refused to disclose the location of the rendezvous. Quote, reporters traveling with Obama sensed something might be happening between the pair when they arrived at Dulles International Airport after an event in Northern Virginia, and Obama was not aboard the airplane, that coming from the AP. Dulles just happens to be walking distance from the Westfields Marriott Hotel in Chantilly, where Henry Kissinger, David Rockefeller, and the rest of the Bilderberg globalists are convening. Asked at the time about the Illinois senator's whereabouts, Gibbs smiled and declined to comment, the report adds. What's the only political event taking place in Northern Virginia at the moment? Well, I saw a comment that said there was a big rally at Nissan Pavilion, but I don't think that was going on in the dead of night. The Bilderberg group meeting, of course, is the only political event perhaps taking place that's of any note. Rather than taking the easier option of meeting at Clinton's Washington mansion, Obama and Hillary went out of their way to grace the Bilderberg elitists with their presence. The neo-lib website Wonkette, which had previously ridiculed conspiracy theorists for ascribing power to Bilderberg, seemed to take a somewhat different tone when it made the connection between Obama and Hillary's meeting and the Bilderberg group. Quote, guess who had a very private talky talk in maybe romantic Northern Virginia tonight? Probably at the Bilderberg group meeting in Chantilly. Your Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, states Wonkette. They really met and talked in private Thursday night, and really it sounds like they did this at that creepy Bilderberg group meeting, which is happening right now and which is so secret that nobody will admit they're going, even though everybody who's anybody goes to Bilderberg. To have the future, potential future president and vice president of America attend a conference that debunkers have dismissed as a mere talking shop for old white men once again underscores the real influence that Bilderberg enjoys. Not one U.S. corporate media outlet has made the connection between the location of the Bilderberg Group conference this year and Obama and Hillary's decision to venture out to Chantilly for their confidential tête-à-tête. Not one U.S. corporate media outlet has yet uttered one word about 125 of the world's most influential power brokers meeting behind closed doors to discuss the future of the planet on U.S. soil while being met by the possible future president of the United States. Both Hillary and Obama have deep-rooted connections to the Bilderberg elitists. Oh, you didn't know that? Well, you better Google it. Now, let's listen to the first little bit that spilled out late last night from MSNBC.
Obviously, we'll be our presidential nominee.
Sorry to interrupt you. Chuck Todd is our political director. He joins us on the phone right now. He's the one who just broke this story. Chuck, what do we know?
Well, I mean, we know that the Obama campaign thought it would be in the best interest to try to keep the media circus from following him around. And, you know, it's a pretty clever trick. They ordered the press corps onto the plane. The plane is literally taking off on the runway right now, and Senator Obama's not on it. And boom, antennas went up everywhere. Kudos to our folks, Lee Cowan and Anna Meigner, who both quickly alerted us before the BlackBerry service got shut down on the plane, and we were able to quickly confirm it. But he's having a meeting with her now, and now that's what we know.
Chuck, is this an unplanned meeting? I mean, is it fair to say that this is this was expected?
I'm still working on more details of when they decided to have this meeting. I mean, I'll be honest, it news is coming fast, but you know, one would assume that they, you know, you don't say this at the last minute, but everything's been coming together so quickly. No doubt that it was probably an idea today, and they needed to have this face-to-face meeting. It was important for Obama and her, and I think that this will only help her. Help her speech on Saturday. Help everybody sort of digest it a little bit better, knowing that they're having this meeting tonight. And frankly, without the media glare, then they can decide which swing state to have their joint sort of endorsement meeting. Because I still think that's the next thing. We have her dropping out on Saturday, saying goodbye to her supporters. But then the final event in this is going to be where does Obama choose to have the unity event where she raises his arm? That's an important visual message.
I should point out that Lee Cowan, a reporter, just telling us that they had the reporters wait for 45 minutes on the plane before they took off without Senator Obama. And as you point out, Chuck, it sounds like it was a little bait and switch there so that the media would be up in the air while Barack Obama is sitting at Hillary Clinton's home.
So let's finish off the article about Hillary and Obama possibly sneaking away for their secret meeting with some Bilderberg globalists. Back to the article. Bill Clinton attended the 91 meeting in Germany shortly before becoming president, and he attended again in 99 when the conference was held in Sintra, Portugal, despite Hillary's lie that he had not attended in 15 years. Or rather, no, that's Bill's lie, and you can see that. It's up on YouTube right now. Hillary herself was rumored to have attended the 2006 meeting in Ottawa, Canada, and as reported last month with the link for you, Bilderberg luminary and top corporate elitist James A. Johnson will select Democratic candidate Barack Obama's running mate for the 2008 election and in turn potentially act as a kingmaker for America's future president. Johnson also selected John Kerry's running mate, John Edwards, in 2004 after Edwards had impressed Bilderberg elitists Kissinger and Rockefeller with a speech he gave at the globalist confab in Italy that year. Johnson, who attended last year's Bilderberg meeting in Turkey, is a representative for Friends of Bilderberg, an offshoot group that organizes Bilderberg's annual meeting. Hillary and Obama's attendance of the 2008 possible attendance of the 2008 Bilderberg meeting and the complete failure of the mainstream media to report on any of it once again betrays the super secretive nature and influential reputation that the 54-year-old organization still maintains. Now, posted up under this heading on MediaMonarchy.com, Obama and Hillary having secret meeting in D.C., there is the full video that you just heard a little bit of And I also added a bunch of updates that I'm not going to be able to go through all of them in their entirety. But if you picked up the little special episode I made a few days ago and called it Episode 77B, I went over basically revolution, assassination, and the presidential selection, going over the interesting conflation of JFK and Obama, the idea that these two characters are intertwined. Now, I noticed it a lot in the last several months. I use Google Reader, an RSS reader, to give me updates so I don't have to go to all the sites and check out stuff. Some of the things I do is also run a search and just save that feed, so see if there's any updates on that keyword. So I have keywords like 9/11 and also have JFK. The JFK news feed usually gives me a lot of stuff about the airport that I'm not interested in. However, it does give me stuff about JFK assassination-related news. What started to happen in the last few months is I noticed all I was getting under that feed was news about Obama and his comparisons to JFK. And I just wonder if there's some sort of mimetics happening here, some sort of predictive programming of some sort. But anyway, let's read some of these headlines that conflate Obama and Kennedy, and I'm sure there'll be some others mixed in there as well. So we got What Obama Must Do to Live Up to the Kennedy Political Legacy. That's coming from MyMag.com. We got Obama is No JFK, TimesDaily.com. Raw Story has a clip from MSNBC with Mika Brzezinski, the daughter of Obama's chief foreign policy advisor, Zbigniew Brzezinski. She's a nice talking head on MSNBC. There's a little clip of her asking if Hillary's waiting for some unknown Obama trapdoor to open. ABC asking the same question, is Clinton waiting for bombshell to drop on Obama? These were questions basically asked before and during the final primaries last Tuesday. Dems endgame means more games, that coming from Time. We also have pro-Clinton demonstrators warning of defecting, and I've seen photos and demonstrations and things. People have signs that say, if Obama gets the nomination, I'm voting for McCain. Speaking of McCain and Hillary and Obama, they all went to the big AIPAC conference just a few days ago. And it's interesting to see that as the primaries all wrap up, where do they all run to? They all run to the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, because they know which side their bread is buttered. So McCain uses his AIPAC speech to criticize Obama on Iran. That's from Raw Story. Neocon Bill Kristol, linked over on the Huffington Post, basically speaks a little bit of truth in saying that Obama and McCain are pretty much the same on Iran. They both would like to eradicate them. And both McCain and Obama exaggerating Iran's nuclear program, that coming from McClatchy. November sit-out threats worry GOP, that's from the Washington Times, basically asking the question that I know even people like my mom, an old-school conservative, says, I don't really like any of them, and I don't know if I'm going to vote for any of them. So that could also be an unexplored clusterfuck to come. Huge crowd at St. Paul as Obama savors the moment. That's from McClatchy. Obama clinches nomination. Clinton wins South Dakota but doesn't drop out. We've got Obama is a JFK-style target. That's coming from AustralianNews.com.au. Clinton's victorious defeat from The Guardian. We've got Obama begins running mate search. And again, they put up the idea that, you know, it's going to be his decision and his decision alone. We already know that James Johnson, Bilderberg Group, Kingmaker, is going to select Obama's running mate for him. And I don't have it linked up, but there was also news in the last week of Jimmy Carter basically saying that if Obama picked Hillary as his running mate, that would be the, quote, worst mistake he could make. And it's interesting to think about the idea that presidents maybe sometimes pick an insurance policy vice president, someone way worse than them, as if to say, hey, if you get rid of me, look who you got. Poppy Bush did it with Quayle. I think we've seen it many times. So the idea for Obama to stay somewhat safe, if it's not all fixed in the first place, my friends, I feel a big stinking setup coming. But if he's to stay in the clear, I would imagine he would have to pick someone really far left. He should pick, you know, Kucinich or Gravel or Nader or someone. As if to say, oh, if you get rid of me, look what you got. Whereas if he picks Hillary, I would have to say he is finished. So We also have Hillary saying that Obama will be Israel's friend. And again, they all spoke at the AIPAC conference just a few days ago. Again, if you don't know what AIPAC is, A-I-P-A-C, just Google AIPAC plus spying and you'll find out a lot. Students call Obama the JFK of a new generation. That's from the Orlando Sentinel. Existentialist cowboy Lynn Hart's great blog asking the question about Obama's first major test. Will he actually confront all these new spying powers on Americans? Brash Check TV has a good video about Israel's influence on U.S. foreign policy. L.A. Times has Obama vows to support Israel. Daniel Pipes has been quoted from thinkprogress.org saying that Bush will attack Iran if the Democrats win the White House. Scoop out of New Zealand says, in quotes, Obama, Israel's security is sacrosanct. What about American security? Now, here's one that we're going to go into a little bit more. A Washington Post op-ed piece mentions Obama and an American union. So if we jump down to this, and again, it's coming from the Washington Post, linked from my man Doug at blacklistednews.com. If we jump two-thirds of the way down, here's one example of new thinking he should pursue. This is Obama. The United States should apply to relations with hemispheric neighbors many of the lessons of the European Union and its half-century of economic and political... Half-century? Oh, I thought the European Union just popped up 10 years ago. A functioning American union that pools sovereignty is a goal worth introducing now. But that quest cannot start by tearing down the NAFTA and other hemispheric trade accords. A President Obama has to be willing to sit down with the Prime Minister of Canada and the President of Mexico without preconditions, such as demands for treaty renegotiations. So there you go, buried in a Washington Post op-ed is telling Obama to work towards a North American union. As has already been going on, just check out SPP, the Security and Prosperity Partnership. Here's a ridiculous one, and this ties into all the hoopla manufactured around Obama, the Bilderberg Brzezinski puppet. George Lucas says the Force is with Obama. This is from the AFP. George Lucas has created legendary film heroes like Luke Skywalker and Indiana Jones, but the U.S. director says that in real life, his hero is Obama. Lucas was in Japan last Wednesday to promote his latest film, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, as Obama clinched the Democratic Party's nomination for president. Quote, "We have a hero in the making back in the United States today because we have a new candidate for president of the United States, Barack Obama," Lucas said when he was asked who his childhood heroes were. Obama, quote, "For all of us that have dreams and hope, is a hero." Thanks, George Lucas. If we jump to Press TV, they... telling it like it is, with a little bit of slant about AIPAC. Obama shamelessly panders to AIPAC. Iran says Barack Obama's combative stance toward Tehran's nuclear case suggests that he may be brainwashed by Zionist propaganda. In a Thursday statement, Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Mohammad Ali Husseini condemned the Democratic nominee's brazen denial of the peaceful nature of Tehran's nuclear program in a recent speech to the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. He criticized Obama's combative stance towards Iran's nuclear program and stressed that the peaceful nature of Iran's uranium enrichment is an indisputable fact, just like the hundreds of nukes that Israel has is an undisputable fact. If we hit up the last few bits of articles updated under Hillary and Obama have a secret meeting in D.C., we've also got Stevie Wonder says Obama is a mix of JFK and MLK. Obama to eliminate Iran... eliminate being his words. The AP, and this nice headline from Lee Rogers at roguegovernment.com, the world thinks Obama will save them, and they go into all the hoopla again around the globe, thinking that Obama is going to be our savior. Clinton to suspend presidential campaign on Friday. This is an older one from Raw Story. Word has it now it's going to be Saturday, as we also heard in the clip a few minutes ago. The SeattlePI.com, Seattle Post-Intelligencer, Obama faces same Veep dilemma as JFK. JFK's dilemma was tied in with LBJ, who they did not want to give the VP slot to. For whatever reason, they offered it just as a goodwill gesture, not thinking for a second he would accept it, but he did, and the rest is bloody coup history. So keep an eye peeled on MediaMonarchy.com for all the latest on all these things going on with revolution, assassination memes, and the presidential selection. Here's one now from a couple days ago that really pisses me off. As you know, I'm born and bred West Virginian, lived there for the first 28 years of my life, and I've been out here in Portland, Oregon for the last 3 years. But let's hear what the quote-unquote vice president said when he was talking to the press club.
When Lynn was doing the research on her book, discovered an interesting thing. I won't bore you with all the details. We'd always known about the Cheney family line on my father's side of the family. It was back to Massachusetts in the 1630s. My grandmother was named Tyler, but it turned out she was descended from a Richard Cheney, same last name who landed in Maryland in the 1650s. So we had Cheneys on both sides of the family, and we don't even live in West Virginia. But you can say those things when you're not running for re-election.
Hey, I've got a joke for you too, Dick. Have you heard the one about the draft dodging, drunk driving, call girl punching, friend shooting, war profiteering scumfuck vice president? He went to The Hague for war crimes. How you like that one, Dick? So, my man Kurt Nimmo wrote an article about this. It's the real Cheney, a vicious joke teller slamming the people of West Virginia as inbred. Dix does not have a sensitive bone in his body, obviously not giving a hoot about the people of West Virginia because, as he declares in the video, he's not running for re-election, so what the heck? Mr. Cheney was the keynote speaker at a journalism awards luncheon hosted by the Gerald R. Ford Foundation. I didn't know Gerald Ford was a reporter. The vice president did use the question and answer session to reveal a lighter side of himself, all the while throwing in a few characteristic zingers, reports the New York Times. Dick's light side? Of course, as the point man in the White House for the neocons, this light side took on a horrific dimension, resulting in Dick's orchestration of premeditated murder of more than a million Iraqis, to say nothing of the possible additional millions who die from cancer due to the massive use of depleted uranium in that country. Considered in this light, Cheney's zinger at the National Press Club is a mote of dust by way of comparison. Instead of becoming nauseated, the press burst out laughing at Dick's deadpan slander of the people of West Virginia. Not all that surprising, as the corporate media to this day refuses to admit its role in mass murder. And of course, they cracked up, and if you want to destroy whatever little growing hope you have sometimes that people are waking up to what the fuck is going on, just look at some of the comments on the Washington Post blog and the Baltimore Sun blog that I have linked in this story, and you have people saying, oh, those West Virginians, they're too stupid to even know a joke was made about them. So, from a born and bred West Virginian, I say, fuck you very much, and they're taking your dollar and killing you with GM foods and vaccines too, motherfucker. Alright, sorry. Moving on now to some of the latest 9/11 news, and of course we have the big dog and pony show trial going on, where we have the five masterminds of 9/11. I don't know how many masterminds there are, but if you torture them for 5 years, I imagine you'll find a lot. So, judge critical of Gitmo trials is dismissed. This first from Think Progress. Army Colonel Peter Brownback III, a judge who was hearing a war crimes case at Guantanamo Bay and, quote, publicly expressed frustration with military prosecutors' refusal to give evidence to the defense, has been dismissed. Brownback had threatened to suspend the proceedings against Omar Khadr unless prosecutors handed over Khadr's medical and interrogation records since his July 02 capture in Afghanistan. Pentagon prosecutors have also rushed to schedule high-profile detainee trials during the height of the presidential campaign season. Diving further into the trials, 9/11 suspects to appear on 2,973 murder charges. This from the Ottawa Citizen. Five leading al-Qaeda suspects will face a military judge to enter a plea to 2,973 charges of murder, one for every person killed in the military black op known as 9/11. So we've also got McClatchy linked in there, as well as WCCO.com, and we're going to hear a little bit from them. But we also have from The Guardian, KSM, go ahead and make me a martyr. The alleged mastermind of the September 11th terrorist attacks has disposed of the U.S. military lawyer allocated to defend him and told a Gitmo tribunal that he would welcome being put to death. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and four alleged al-Qaeda co-conspirators face a U.S. military judge for the first time. So I put together a little bit of clips from WCCO.com as well as the AP as well as CBS, and let's listen to the 9/11 dog and pony show.
Make no mistake, this is a high-profile test of the Bush administration-backed military tribunal system. It's a system which was ruled unconstitutional just 2 years ago by the U.S. Supreme Court. It's been modified, resurrected, just in time for today's court proceedings.
It's been 7 years since terrorists made September 11th a day of mourning and changed the way we live. Today, the confessed architect and mastermind of the attacks, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and four of his accomplices will stand before a military tribunal for their arraignment in a high-security courthouse set up on the Guantanamo Naval Base in Cuba.
They will be explained the charges, and they will have the right to have the charges read to them, or they will be notified of the charges in one way or the other.
9/11 families will not be allowed in the courtroom. Military officials have already acknowledged that policy is a mistake and have pledged to change it for future sessions. But journalists and other observers will be present to hear the detainees, who will get the opportunity to make their case in open court. It's a significant risk for U.S. officials because the detainees may get the opportunity to spread al-Qaeda propaganda.
Human rights advocates will clearly be paying close attention to these proceedings, which will operate under a much looser set of rules compared to a U.S. civilian court. The judge today in Guantanamo will be able to consider hearsay evidence and confessions obtained through coercion. We're live in Lower Manhattan this morning. Jay Dow, CBS 2 News.
Khalid Sheikh Mohammed hasn't been seen since the U.S. released this picture of him when he was captured in Pakistan 5 years ago. But he appeared in court Thursday, sporting a long white beard and thick glasses, and he also appeared noticeably thinner than he was when he was captured. The proceeding against him and four other key suspects in the 9/11 attacks has drawn dozens of journalists who are observing it, all amid very tight security, and also criticism from some legal groups.
The commissions were a complete and utter farce. Today, the accused saw it for the farce that it is.
Inside the courtroom, the judge warned Mohammed he and the other suspects faced the death penalty if convicted of organizing the 9/11 attacks. But Mohammed says he wants to be a martyr.
Let's put the evidence out there.
Jim Rich has lost his son, a firefighter, in the attack on the World Trade Center. He says the suspects deserve to die.
Well, I spoke to the prosecutors, and they're down there, and they said they have mountains of evidence on these people. And I think if the evidence shows that they're guilty, you know, my son's never going to walk back in that door. And if the death penalty is what it takes, then that's what it is, because evil people like that are just killing innocent people.
A defense attorney, however, says Americans would be ashamed if they knew what was going on and the ramifications for the Constitution.
I wear the uniform with pride. I am proud to be a member of the U.S. Navy, but I don't think these proceedings make for a proud day for any member of the service.
The Supreme Court struck down the administration's use of military commissions in 2006, but Congress changed the law and resurrected them. Since then, the commissions have been mired in confusion.
The fact now that there's no way to fix the military commissions, all we can do is pull the plug.
Meanwhile, the Supreme Court is likely to be back in the picture this month when it rules on the rights of Guantanamo prisoners. Its decision could delay the proceedings or halt them altogether. Mike Gracia, the Associated Press.
This first military court appearance by Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was both dramatic and also bizarre. Sitting next to four alleged al-Qaeda co-conspirators, the self-proclaimed mastermind of 9/11 said openly in court that he had been tortured by the U.S., and he called the case against him a sham.
It was a surreal reunion of five men who the government charges were on the board of directors of al-Qaeda. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, looking dramatically different from the disheveled man in this now infamous mugshot, was clearly in charge. Mohammed, dressed in a white tunic and turban with a flowing 10-inch beard, openly made hand signals and seemed to be directing his co-defendants, who sat single file behind him. Waleed bin Attash, known as Khalid, accused of running terror training camps. Ramzi bin al-Shib, who the government says helped train the 9/11 hijackers. And two money men, Ali Abdulaziz Ali and Mustafa Hausawi, accused of financing the attacks. But Mohammed, educated in the U.S., dominated the courtroom. chanting verses from the Quran and providing his own English translation. KSM said he only answered to the laws of Allah, and he rejected his American lawyers, saying their President George Bush waged war in Afghanistan and Iraq, and they are still killing people there. KSM, who the CIA admits was subjected to waterboarding, questioned the legitimacy of the military hearing. For 5 years they torture, he said. After the torturing, they transfer us to Inquisition land in Guantanamo. The judge warned KSM against representing himself, reminding the accused terror chief that he and his colleagues are charged with killing nearly 3,000 Americans, and they could be sentenced to death. That is what I wish, Mohammed calmly responded. I wish to be martyred for a long time. Co-defendant Bin al-Sheib, who tried four times to join the 9/11 hijackers in their attacks, echoed that defiance, telling the court with a smile, I've been seeking martyrdom for 5 years. I tried for 9/11 and could not get a visa. If this martyrdom happens today, so be it. The others also followed KSM's lead. Each fired his lawyers and each condemned the legal process. In nearly perfect English, detainee Aziz Ali put it this way, this government failed to treat me as a human for 5 years. My conscience does not allow me to participate. Some legal critics called the hearing, which has now ended, a complete and utter farce. At a minimum, it was certainly weird. At one point, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, for example, objected to one of the court sketches of him. He said it was an unfair image. The sketch eventually was changed.
So that's just a little bit about KSM and the tortured 9/11 patsies and the dog and pony show going on at Gitmo. Now, it's interesting, too, that they mention hand signals and propaganda. Of course, you can bet that if there's hand signals and propaganda, you know where it's coming from. A little bit of other related, correlated 9/11 news. Arizona legislator Karen Johnson asks McCain to meet on 9/11. Now, we've covered Arizona State Senator Karen Johnson from the 18th District of Arizona. She's recently come to see the light about the real questions about the official conspiracy theory of 9/11. And that link is there for you back to April on MediaMonarchy.com. But from Op-Ed News, Arizona State Senator Karen Johnson delivered a letter to the office of U.S. Senator John McCain asking him to meet with a group of professionals to discuss the events of 9/11. Johnson recently announced her support for a new independent investigation of 9/11, saying, quote, even the chairman of the commission has announced his dissatisfaction with the report. Anyone who reads the report can see that much was left out and that there are many discrepancies. Another bit about the phony show trial going on. U.S. does not invite the 9/11 families to the trials. From the DPA, the U.S. military expressed regret over failing to include the families of the victims of 9/11 terrorist attacks to the tribunals of five key suspects. That was a mistake. We'll make sure that doesn't happen again, said Brigadier General Thomas Hartman, the top legal advisor to the military commissions at the U.S. Naval Base in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. That was a mistake. We'll make sure that doesn't happen again. Because we'll make sure on the next massive false flag psyop, there won't be any patsies left to do anything with. From thinkprogress.org, and also some other links in there for you, like to whitehouse.gov and MSNBC and 1010 Wins. After failing to protect 9/11 first responders from toxic threats, Tommy Thompson awarded a contract to treat them. Tommy Thompson served as President Bush's Secretary of Health and Human Services from January 01 to 2005. It was during his tenure after the 9/11 attacks that the Bush administration largely ignored the health risks facing first responders at the World Trade Center site. Yet apparently the Bush administration believes Thompson did a heck of a job dealing with the aftermath of 9/11 because the CDC, the Centers for Disease Creation, Control, has awarded Tommy Thompson an $11 million contract to treat some of those very same workers who became sick on Tommy Thompson's watch. You scratch my back, and I'll scratch yours with a nice $1 million no-bid contract. Finally, only sort of related to 9/11, but interestingly enough, it's a different psyop. This is the man-made global warming, carbon footprint bullshit global warming debate. The two guys that scaled the New York Times towers in New York yesterday, they went up, and one of them is Alain Robert, the French Spider-Man who's climbed all over the place, and I got the link to his website. You can check out his photos and all his travails. But it's 9/11 versus global warming as two climbers scale the New York Times Tower. This is from the Associated Press. Hours after the arrest of a French skyscraper climber who scaled the New York Times Tower, a second person was seen climbing the building's exterior. Earlier in the day, Alan Robert, nicknamed Spider-Man, made his way to the top of the Midtown Manhattan skyscraper. He unfurled a banner as he climbed that said, "Global warming kills more people than a 9/11 every week." Hundreds of people craned their necks to watch Robert climb up the exterior of the new tower. Workers cheered from a construction site across the street, and Robert pumped his fists. Police took him into custody at the top. Charges against the 45-year-old Robert are pending. Now, there are links over to his site, alanrobert.com, and you can read about him on Wikipedia. And there's also the related New York Times story, as well as the AFP. So, I think if you link over to his site, you can see whatever explanation he has to the global warming kills more people than 9/11 every week claim. I haven't investigated it. I'll have to get right on that. Because as the ice caps melt on Mars, again, bullshit. Shifting gears yet again, my friends, it's fetuses, FEMA, pharma, and Freemasons. With a whole rack of news how we're under attack on every level, from our DNA to formaldehyde trailers and antidepressants. So first from WNBC, a study says antidepressants are A-OK for fetuses. Expectant mothers can safely use prescribed antidepressants during their first trimester, according to a new study from the Université de Montréal and Saint-Justine Hospital, with links for you. This is the first study to investigate the impact of antidepressant use during the first trimester of pregnancy in mothers with psychiatric disorders, said Dr. Anique Berard. In terms of birth malformations in this population, we found no difference between women who used antidepressants and those who did not use antidepressants during their first trimester, because they have psychiatric disorders and they already were going to have birth malformations, I suppose. But yeah, so don't worry. Keep taking your psychotropic SSRI drugs and don't worry about it. Don't worry if, you know, all the moms who drown their kids and kill their families are always on psychotropic drugs, and kids who shoot up high schools and malls and things, they're always on serotonin reuptake inhibitors. But hey, don't worry about it. If we jump to our friends to the north, soon to be absorbed into the North American Union, Canadian Bill C-51 pits Big Pharma against natural food. This from the Community Press, communitypress.ca. Natural food vendors in Canada may have to turn to their own shelves in search of a stress remedy as Bill C-51 awaits its second reading in Parliament. The federal government says the bill is designed to prevent problems from the use of vitamins and natural remedies. However, the natural foods industry say the bill's intentions are purely for profit. And there's a link for sciencebasedmedicine.org. The health food industry is growing constantly, and I think we're taking a piece of the pie from Big Pharma, said Cindy King, who owns Natural Sequence, a natural food store located in Trenton. Big Pharma and big government go hand in hand. And so you can link to stopc51.com to read more about the Canadian Bill C-51. And, of course, it also ties into what is known as Codex Alimentarius. Basically, as Monsanto destroys our food supply and are going to give us a pale, disgusting, murderous replacement, they're also trying to take out all the natural remedies that have worked for generations because it's taken a piece of the pie from Big Pharma. Finally, in this batch of stories, from the Walton Tribune and from roguegovernment.com, Freemasons want your children's DNA. Nothing, and now this is one of those, you gotta watch out, it's basically a press release from the Freemasons. So it's not really a news article, it's just a reposted press release, but nothing can strike fear into the heart of a parent faster than the thought of a missing child. While Walton County's Masonic lodges cannot do much to prevent a child from going missing, they can provide parents with valuable tools if such a tragedy might happen. As part of the Georgia Child Identification Program, or GA-CHIP, or GA-CHIP, sponsored by the Grand Lodge of Georgia, Freemasons across Walton County are working to help parents avert their worst nightmare. Basically, the Freemasons down at the old Grand Lodge of Georgia and all the other places in Georgia are putting together a nice little CD-ROM, a little CD, little box package that contains basically everything about your child. from their DNA to their medical records and all their stats and important information that can be uploaded to the Matrix. If you hit the link and go over to gachip.org, their logo is fantastic. It's a nice little GA chip, and it has the Masonic square and compass for you. Shifting gears again, but to a different attack, this one on your wallet. Felonious George Soros warns of a stock market crash, this coming from The Guardian. George Soros, the billionaire hedge fund manager, will warn that the oil price has become a bubble that could trigger a stock market crash. The Financial Times, FT.com, reported that Soros will tell the U.S. Senate Commerce Committee that oil was pushed to its recent all-time peak of $135 a barrel by a new wave of speculators. Soros himself is no stranger to market speculation, having made, around $1 billion in 1992, betting that the UK government would be unable to keep sterling within the European exchange rate mechanism. And so this is known as Black Wednesday. So basically, I have linked in this story, Felonious Soros warns of market crash. That basically, when somebody like this says things about market crashes, you better listen. So if we hit up the Black Wednesday whitewash on Wikipedia, in British politics and economics, Black Wednesday refers to September 16th, 92, when the Conservative government was forced to withdraw the pound from the currency fix, the aforementioned European Exchange Rate Mechanism, ERM, after they were unable to keep sterling above its agreed lower limit when currency markets believed the policy was unsustainable. The most high-profile of the currency market investors, George Soros, made over $1 billion profit. In 97, the UK Treasury estimated the cost of Black Wednesday at £3.4 billion. Now, of course, George Soros was tried in French court and was found guilty of insider trading. Now, let's get to one of the biggest stories and most important stories of this week. Today being the 40th anniversary of the assassination of Robert Francis Kennedy. 40 years of misinformation. And I have a lot of links and a lot of documentation in some of the articles posted up on MediaMonarchy.com under the assassination of RFK, 40 years of disinformation. That title and the first report comes from 911blogger.com. Just as surely as the American public and the rest of the world was not told the truth about the assassinations of JFK and MLK, with links for you to learn more, so it is with RFK, Robert F. Kennedy. Now, 40 years later, new scientifically derived evidence has come to the fore in the form of digital acoustic analysis, which we've gone over on recent episodes of MediaMonarchy.com. But even before this analysis was available, a host of anomalies arise from the events of that day, as well as the strange mental condition of Sirhan Sirhan, which may be the indication of a mind-controlled assassin. There are stories also linked up from the San Francisco Chronicle and a lot of other sites, like the Assassination Records Review Board Library, anopenandshutcase.com, maryferrell.org, Paperless Research, or rather paperlessarchives.com, realhistoryarchives.com, and tons more. I've put together quite the little bit of audio for you, coming from everything from Ted Chirac's old documentary, The Second Gun, The Plot to Kill RFK, as well as recent reports from the AP and many other places. So, my friends, let's learn more about the 40th anniversary of the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy.
Now we know. We think we know what happened in 1972, but we know only what we can prove, the tip of the iceberg. How much deeper does the ice run, and how much darker? What do we know about 1968 and about 1963? There are those who know, or say they do, the officials, those in power, and usually they want to stay where they are. They act as though truth was their own private property and everybody else was condemned either to err or to trespass. They are the self-righteous kings and barons of modern tragedies, and the crusading knights are the journalists.
Los Angeles District Attorney Joseph P. Bush.
During the past 4 months, I took the unusual action of completely reviewing the evidence of a murder which was committed 3.5 years ago before the eyes of many people. I took this step as District Attorney because of the special nature of this event as a stifling public tragedy. A measure of its impact is the continuing and fruitless search by many persons to find a more rational basis for this senseless act.
You got all those people, see the man pull the trigger, and we wasted that many millions of dollars carrying on a ludicrous trial.
We could spend another $600,000 if there's any doubt whatsoever that that man is guilty.
This chorus of pros and cons is the people, you and me, the heartbeat of a democracy. We are all America has. The decision is ours. Whether we can periodically let a few ounces of lead vote for a whole nation.
No one, no matter where he lives or what he does, can be certain who next will suffer from some senseless act of bloodshed. And yet it goes on and on and on in this country of ours. Why?
He was wrestled to the ground, and then there were other shots. There's no question that there was another gunman, because one of the people who was hit, just grazed, was standing next to me, and that happened when Sirhan had been wrestled to the ground. So that's the interesting thing. There was another assassin, or another several assassins, then it was Bedlam. As you know, Kennedy died about 24 hours later.
John Pilger, what about Robert Kennedy's views of Vietnam? Also, of course, your view is not the standard one, that there were other assassins.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear the second part.
Your view is not the standard one, that there were other assassins there.
Well, I told the FBI interviewed quite a few of us, and I told the FBI at length just what had happened, the numbers of shots that were fired that I heard, I thought I heard, and I'm pretty sure I did hear them, which Sirhan couldn't have fired. There were two people seen running from the Ambassador Hotel, including one famous woman in a polka dot dress. A number of us thought we saw those. We can't be absolutely sure about that. There is a new documentary out, which I haven't seen, which I understand goes into this in depth.
I'm going to talk to you about a CIA intervention that occurred right here in Los Angeles. That is generally not discussed as a CIA intervention. But I will discuss it as such, because I believe that to have been the case. I am the attorney for Sirhan Sirhan, and I want to talk to you about the assassination of Robert Kennedy. I think I've spoken to this group before about that subject. I can give you some updates that further focus on the role of the CIA in this plot, which was an intervention. It was a covert operation, the effect of which was to guarantee the election of President Richard Nixon, who would continue the war in Vietnam. Another CIA intervention, but that one in a foreign country at our expense.
40 years after his assassination, the eldest daughter of Robert Kennedy says the country is still grappling with many of the issues that deeply concerned him in 1968.
My father said, get involved in politics, because we've got huge issues to resolve. We've got a terrible war. We've got issues of disparities in wealth, where the rich are getting richer and the middle class is suffering. And these are policy questions about what kind of country we are.
Kathleen Kennedy Townsend was 16 when her father was gunned down in a Los Angeles hotel as he celebrated his win in the California Democratic presidential primary. In an Associated Press interview, she didn't want to talk about the emotions surrounding the death of her father, but she did talk about a letter he wrote to her on the day of President John F. Kennedy's funeral.
As the oldest of the Kennedy grandchildren, you have a special responsibility. Be kind to others and work for your country. Love, Daddy. And now, if you think about that, love and compassion and working for the country are not the first reaction. What he was passing on to me was a sense of, we have to look forward, we have to be compassionate towards others, and we have to have a sense of responsibility.
almost as soon as Senator Robert Kennedy was shot in 1968. Disturbing reports have led many people to wonder, was more than one shooter responsible? Kennedy friend and supporter Paul Schrade believes Sirhan Sirhan did not act alone.
Witnesses said they saw another gun. The police department never picked up the guard's gun, never picked up any other gun that might have been in the room that night.
For those who believe in the second gunman theory, the failure to collect a security guard's gun is just one of many problems they have with the official findings. They feel that extra bullets at the crime scene, controversial autopsy results, and destroyed evidence all point to a second gunman and cover-up by the Los Angeles Police Department. And now there may be irrefutable proof. Audio expert Phil Van Praagh has analyzed the lost RFK recording more than anyone else in the world. The FBI analyzed it in 1969 and dismissed it. In 2004, it was rediscovered in a California archive. Today, modern technology is unlocking its secrets.
There's a lot of conjecture, and there always will be, as to how many actual shots were fired. However, there had to have been more than one weapon involved.
On the other side of the RFK debate, government officials and other experts can't believe a conspiracy is even being considered. Lynn Compton was one of the original prosecutors in the RFK assassination case.
We went over everything possible and left no stone unturned. As to Sirhan himself, there's no question that it was an open and shut case. He was grabbed with the gun still in his hand.
The Democrats were in the midst of a wild and hard-fought race. President Lyndon Johnson blew it wide open when he dropped this into a primetime speech on the Vietnam War.
I shall not see, and I will not accept the nomination of my party for another term as your president.
With Johnson out, that left a three-way Democratic race. Bobby Kennedy, Vice President Hubert Humphrey, and anti-war Senator Gene McCarthy, who had the momentum having just won the Oregon primary. So Kennedy placed a big bet on California.
You here in the state of California might very well decide who's going to be the Democratic nominee and therefore very possibly the next president of the United States.
Then came the day of the vote. Bobby Kennedy watched returns at his California campaign headquarters before heading to the ballroom at the Ambassador Hotel.
My thanks to all of you, and now it's on to Chicago and let's win there.
His assassin, Sirhan Sirhan, was waiting for him in the kitchen. We will never know how RFK would have changed U.S. history. We can only remember how we felt and how his own brother remembered him.
Simply as a good and decent man who saw wrong and tried to right it, saw suffering and tried to heal it, saw war and tried to stop it. As he said many times in many parts of this nation, to those he touched and who sought to touch him, some men see things as they are and say why.
I dream things that never were and say why not.
40 years after RFK's death, questions linger. And so that was a little composite mix I put together for you, and all those videos and clips are available in one way or another up on the posting on MediaMonarchy.com. The assassination of RFK, 40 years of disinformation. And like I said, that was stuff from The Second Gun and also John Pilger the other day on Democracy Now. We had Sirhan Sirhan's late attorney, Larry Teeter, has now been replaced by the far more appropriate and skilled William Pepper. We also heard from the AP and a little bit from the Conspiracy Files. So we also have an article from the San Francisco Chronicle linked up. 40 years after RFK's death, questions linger. Less than 26 hours after being shot early on June 5th, 1968, right after winning the California presidential primary, Kennedy was dead. He was 42. Three major assassinations rocked America in the 60s. Two of the assassins, Lee Harvey Oswald, the killer of JFK, and James Earl Ray, who shot MLK, are dead. But Sirhan Sirhan, convicted of killing RFK 40 years ago this week in the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles, is living out his days in the California State Prison at Corcoran with his good buddy Charles Manson. He is 64 and has never fully explained what happened that night, other than to say he can't remember it. And there's a lot of links in there. Like I said, an openandshutcase.com, aarclibrary.org, and also to the mentioned RFK Must Die documentary from Shane O'Sullivan. John Pilger mentioned that in the clip from Democracy Now. And more and more and more is all there for you, and you need to learn more about it. Now, my friends, we've reached the top of the hour. We're into hour number two of episode 78 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James. I'm your host and webmaster. This is June 6th, 2008, coming to you from the Portland Radio Authority and the Revere Radio Network, praradio.org, revereradionetwork.com. We're going to shift gears and bring it back home a little bit here to the People's Republic of Oregon. This coming from Portland Indie Media. Anti-pesticide activist tasered by Oregon cops. On May 30th, Eugene police repeatedly tasered a University of Oregon student organizer at a peaceful downtown rally supporting an end to toxic roadside pesticide spraying in Lane County, Oregon. EPD wrongfully arrested two students and one community member, collectively known as the Kesey Three, as the events took place at Eugene's Ken Kesey Free Speech Plaza. And as we know, speech ain't free. There's a hefty fucking fee.
They pulled me across the street and said I'm under arrest before I can talk to the media.
Say in this news release, the Eugene Police Department, they said the rally was otherwise peaceful. However, there were some witnesses who reported overhearing rally participants prior to the incident planning a way to provoke a call that would get police to the area. They're saying that basically there are some people here that were trying to get the cops here to create an incident. I mean,
that's bullshit. I'm sorry. That's completely ridiculous. First of all, I don't know what their grounds are for saying that. It just sounds like complete hearsay, lies made up. There would be no point for bringing the cops here. There would be nothing constructive about that. This wasn't a huge radical demonstration that we wanted, like, the cops to come and the media to jump on it. We just wanted the people in the community to know what was going on.
So we hear that Ian was threatening the police with poison. We also heard that the people within this gathering of people here on Kesey Square were also somehow trying to figure out some dastardly plan to create some sort of action which would draw the police in and create an incident. Really, all that happened here was that the EPD, again, treated citizens like they were criminals. All they needed to do was come to Ian and ask Ian, hey, son, what do you have in that can there or that spray bottle? Is that just water? And Ian would have said, yes, that's all it is. And if the police just also said, hey, could you just move across the crosswalk a little bit quicker because you're blocking a little bit too much traffic, Ian definitely would have said, no problem. And we would have had just another boring rally here in Eugene, Oregon. But we didn't. And now the cops decided just to ratchet shit up again. And now it's a big issue and a lot more of your money being spent because the cops just couldn't be human to these kids down here in Kesey Square on May 30th, 2008. What a drag, man.
Anti-pesticide activist tasered by Oregon cops, and that full video is available. It's up on Portland Indie Media, as well as Infowars.com, as well as MediaMonarchy.com. Now, what I should have said at the start of the show, and I need to add this to my notes to say it again and again and again, you're only getting a little taste of the news from the radio version of Media Monarchy. You got to use MediaMonarchy.com. There are so many links and other related research material. I spent a lot of time on the site adding in all the info for you. You hit the links, it runs the searches, you can do the research for yourself. Don't take what I say to be the gospel. You can do the research for yourself. What makes me think of that is our next story, which has a lot of links in there for you that I'm not going to have time to go into. But it also ties in with the North American Union. The article is called America's Heartland is About to be Gutted. This from thepeoplesvoice.org. The multinational corporate takeover of North America. For more than 13 years, North America's Super Corridor Coalition, NASCO, and its members, with a link to nascocorridor.com for you, have been working diligently towards creating a superhighway connecting Canada, the United States, and Mexico. However, the leaders of these three countries continue to deny that such a project even exists, with a link to WorldNet Daily for you. There are three main reasons why our elected governments are denying the existence of this project. First and foremost, it is treason, since it's in total violation of the constitutional rights of citizens for all three countries. Second, because it will lead to a new North American currency referred to as the Amero, which will be a fiat currency controlled by a monopolized private central bank. And third, because all discussions of such a union are being conducted behind closed doors by private corporations and unelected bureaucrats without consulting those pesky citizens of any of those three countries. Now we get to have a little bit of fun, finally. Returning to 911blogger.com, there's a song and video up. It's The Freebies and 9/11's a Lie, and so 9/11 blogger writes, "The Freebies are looking for help in spreading their 9/11's a Lie music video and song far and wide. Reluctantly, they have decided that even though they're extremely proud of the work, they're releasing it anonymously. They believe that this music video has the potential to reach a large audience, and as a work of infotainment, is amusing, informative, and thought-provoking. So here's the audio from The Freebies, 9/11's a Lie.
This is from the old school, new school.
you can tell by the way the buildings fell there was something wrong. Now it's time to tell. Spread the word. It's nothing new. You gotta educate yourself in truth. Well, it's not all right. It's not okay for you to look the other way. We can help you understand the New York Times effect on man. Whether you're a brother or whether you're a mother, 9/11's a lie. 9/11's a lie. That's the freebies with 9/11's a lie. Linked over from 911blogger.com. You got to watch the video. They've got a lot of informative research materials embedded in the visuals. They also have the Gibb brothers looking like they're actually singing the song. So I'd imagine if any of those guys caught a glimpse of the video, they would probably shit. But it's up there for you. Freebies, 911's a lie. Real quick, Alex Ansari, alexansari.com. He has a couple latest episodes of Outside the Box posted up, episodes 154 and 155. On the both of them, he has lots of unfortunate technical difficulties, and if you do anything like this, trying to put together a podcast or a website or a TV show or any of it, there's lots of technical difficulties that always seem to pop up, but in 154 and 155, amid whatever technical difficulties go on, he also speaks with Stan Deo, that's STANDEYO.com, about the mysterious swarm of earthquakes currently being experienced on our planet Earth. Stan shares his knowledge into the higher forms of technology that could be playing a part in the geological upheaval. And so that's two episodes, 2 hours of Outside the Box, 154 and 155 from our man Alex Ansari. Also linked up, as always, are all his latest radio shows from We the People Radio Network, WTPRN.com. And there's about six new episodes posted up under episodes 154 and 155. Returning yet again, my friends, to the secretive globalist elite confab that's going on in Chantilly, Virginia right now. It's the 2008 meeting of the Bilderberg Group. So we have an article posted up, Bilderberg, the Shadow Supergovernment. This coming from Peace Reporter by way of Infowars.com. It was particularly difficult this year to find out when and where the annual conclave of the world's power brokers, the Bilderberg Group, would finally take place. It appears quite certain now that the highly secret meeting of Western political military elites is taking place June 5th through the 8th in Chantilly, Virginia, near Washington, in a luxury hotel immersed in nature, the Westfields Marriott, with a link for you over to their website. You should try and book a room right now, because you won't be able to. Some of the updates linked in about the old Bilderberg Group is a funny one came out yesterday. It's iPods for the global elite. This from Infowars.com. An employee working for Apple Computers sent an email to the Infowars tip line reporting that the Department of Justice has, quote, placed an order for 125 iPods with Bilderberg 2008 engraved on the back, shipping to Chantilly, Virginia at American taxpayer expense. According to the anonymous source at Mac.com, the DOJ is freaking out because the order's going to arrive late. Of course, it should probably come as no surprise, a gaggle of global elitists meeting in secret outside of D.C. to plot one world agenda would get engraved iPod freebies. It is, however, yet another indication that a Bilderberg coterie indeed exists and is meeting in Chantilly, Virginia right now. Thanks to people like Alex Jones and Jim Tucker and Daniel Estulin and others, we have a better understanding of the Bilderberg agenda. Never mind the concerted effort of the corporate media to characterize the Bilderbergers as a harmless association of politicians and business types. So there you go, your tax dollars hard at work, 125 iPods with Bilderberg 2008 engraved on the back. Because I'm sure they can't buy their own iPods, whereas you can barely buy a tank of gas. Some of the other updates linked in. Spooks infest Marriott Hotel as Bilderberg begins. InfoWars team harassed at Marriott covering Bilderberg. My man James over at Total411.info, Total Information Radio. Bilderberg surrounded by space weapon agencies and firms. That's linked to you, Total411.info. One of the other great hosts here on the Revere Radio Network. We also have a nice little press release from roguegovernment.com. He got a hold of the Bilderberg announcement for the 2008 conference. But finally, and of course returning to the presidential selection, if we jump over to CanadaFreePress.com, Judy McLeod has an article, Bilderberg Boys Will Decide Who's Obama's Chosen Veep. Although coming on like a freight train is the messiah for change, Barack Obama's just another poodle of the power brokers when it comes to who will be his vice president. Visit with Ms. Clinton notwithstanding, Obama's in no position to play favors or favorites in the vice president department. The big boys will decide who fills that slot. It's been announced that, of course, Bilderberg luminary and top corporate elitist James A. Johnson will select Democratic candidate Barack Obama's running mate for the 2008 election. For the Bilderberg uninitiated, Johnson also selected John Kerry's running mate, John Edwards, in 2004 after Edwards had impressed Bilderberg elitists Kissinger and Rockefeller. So again, Bilderbergers pull the puppet strings of contemporary politicians. While the media tends to present Bilderberger luminaries as bigwigs in pinstripe suits attending endless secret meetings, they're the global elitists pushing the envelope on one world government. So we are going to see very soon from James A. Johnson, the chosen VP for Barack Bilderberg Obama. I just can't get away from the election news, my friends. Scrolling down, this was brought on by a posting over at Danger Room, which is a great military and technology blog over on Wired.com. He has a posting up that came out, I believe, Tuesday or Wednesday that says, McCain versus Obama. Hell yeah. As if this is supposed to be the best that we can do. And he even says that. This comes from Noah Shachtman, who's the head editor of the Danger Room blog. He says that the two guys together, you know, they're smart, articulate, they have different opinions about Iraq or Iran and healthcare and yada yada. Neither one is a complete hostage to his party's ideological extremes. Blah, blah, blah. Folks, this isn't a partisan political blog, but as a former campaign worker bee and as someone who cares about the big issues facing our country, this presidential race is as good as our system gets. And that really kind of made me ill, so I wrote up just a quick paragraph, posted up, "This is as good as it gets," and of course was the inspiration for our intro song, "As Good as It Gets" from Gene. But I wrote under "This is as good as it gets" on MediaMonarchy.com, "If the 2004 presidential selection was the skull and bones election, then 2008 is shaping up to be the trilateral commission election. If you'd just take a few minutes to look into the real brains and power behind Obama, you'll find figures like Zbigniew Brzezinski, as Carter's national security advisor, Zbig helped to fund and train the Mujahideen, which of course became Al-Qaeda. Obama's chief financial advisor, Austin Goolsbee, is of course a member of Skull and Bones. Add in all the other connections to the Council on Foreign Relations with his wife, and AIPAC, and Kissinger, and Rockefeller, and Bilderberg, and both Bush administrations, and what you'll get is not a recipe for change, but for disaster. Is this really the change you want? Is this as good as it gets?" Now, after the primaries, of course, we know who the winner is, and the winner is AIPAC. So, from Asia Times, atimes.com, they're all here and they're all ready to party. The three U.S. presidential candidates, John McCain, Hillary Clinton, and Barack Obama, also Madam House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, most of the U.S. senators and virtually half of the Congress, Vice President Dick Cheney's wife Lynn, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, embattled Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, and a host of Jewish and non-Jewish political and academic heavy hitters among the 7,000 participants. Such star power wattage, a Washington version of the Oscars, is the stock in trade of AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, the crucial player in what is generally known as the Israel Lobby, and which holds its annual policy conference this last week in Washington, at which the most heavy of the heavyweights will deliver lectures. Republican presidential candidate McCain is opening this year's AIPAC Jamboree. Clinton and Obama were closing it on Wednesday. Walt and Mearsheimer's verdict on the dangerous liaisons between presidential candidates and AIPAC remains unimpeachable. Quote, "None of the candidates is likely to criticize Israel in any significant way or suggest that the U.S. ought to pursue a more even-handed policy in the region, and those who do will probably fall by the wayside." Of course, Walt and Mearsheimer are the ones behind the new book about AIPAC and the Israel lobby. So, like I said earlier, just Google AIPAC plus spying. Shifting gears and moving down to Texas. finally, an injustice has pretty much come to an end. It's all over except for the crying. Polygamous case costs Texas $7 million as all the kids are ordered to go back home because it was a illegal raid in the first place. So this coming from Orange Punch. As the Associated Press reports, more than 400 children taken from a polygamous sex ranch 2 months ago began returning to the arms of their tearful parents Monday, hours after a judge bowed to a state Supreme Court ruling that the seizure was not justified. It's one thing for child kidnapping services to remove a child from a household where specific abuse is alleged, quite another for it to swoop in and remove hundreds of kids from their families and an entire community. The allegation in this case apparently was bogus. Polygamy is strange to most people, but the state overstepped its bounds and undermined parental rights, something that, thankfully, the Texas courts acknowledged. CPS has far too much power and is driven by an ideology whereby the government is in control of the children, parents are guilty until proven innocent, and everything is litigated in a closed, Soviet-like court system where the rules are rigged in favor of the government. Talk about an area in need of vast, freedom-friendly reform. And so that's posted up on Orange Punch. Moving on to a bit of police state news on both sides of the border. But first, we're going to hit up the UPI and the Mooney Press and go to the District of Criminals. DC cops getting semi-automatic rifles. Civil rights activists say the move to arm DC Police Department patrol officers with semi-automatic weapons is going overboard. Officers will be given AR-15 rifles this summer as a way to combat dangerous criminals on the street, the Washington Post reported Saturday with a link for you. It's reported that 352 officers completed training programs to handle the weapon, which have not been used in street patrols until now. "We want to be prepared. I want officers to have what they need to be safe," said Police Chief Kathy L. Lanier. We jump to the San Diego Union Tribune, signonsandiego.com. Mad messing with minds. It's mothers against drunk driving pulling off a nice psyop with high school kids in California. Many juniors and seniors were driven to tears, a few to near hysterics, May 26 when an uniformed police officer arrived in several classrooms to notify them that a fellow student had been killed in a drunk driving accident. At about 10 a.m., students were called to the athletic stadium where they learned that their classmates had not died. There, a group of seniors, police officers, and firefighters staged a startlingly realistic alcohol-induced fatal car crash. The students who had purportedly died portrayed ghostly apparitions encircling the scene. And so there's links to every15minutes.com as well as Wikipedia's Mothers Against Drunk Driving entry. So basically, again, this is sort of like a terror drill, but they're coming in and telling you that your friends have died to fuck with your mind. Mothers Against Drunk Driving, of course, are also known as to wanting to install breathalyzers to start not just convicted drunks' cars, but every car. Shifting gears slightly and looking at a little bit of war games, France, Greece, and Cyprus are holding a joint drill. This is from Press TV. Greece and France have opened joint naval and air military exercises along with Cyprus off the coast of the divided Mediterranean island. The search and rescue operations, which will be held until today, June 6th, was codenamed Argonaut and are the first between the three countries, according to the Cyprus Defense Ministry. Moving to thinkprogress.org, May was the most violent month in Afghanistan since 2001. McClatchy reports that according to an insightful analysis by former Joint Chiefs of Staff Senior Intelligence Officer John McCreary, quote, "May saw more violence than any other month since the 2001 U.S. intervention that toppled the Taliban and forced Osama bin Laden and his followers to flee into Pakistan and, of course, also let the poppies grow wild and free again." From McCreary's analysis, April featured 199 violent incidents in 86 districts, making it the most lethal April in the six-year conflict. May featured 214 incidents of violence in over 100 districts, also a new six-year total for May and the highest single monthly total. Despite official efforts to spotlight improvement, with a link for you, the spring offensive thus far is worse than last year's spring offensive. The security situation has deteriorated again. More war game team-ups between nations. U.S. and Canada team up for Frontier Sentinel. This coming from theunionleader.com. About 3,000 people from Canadian and U.S. military forces and government civilian agencies will take part in a training exercise testing responses to a terrorist mine explosion off the seacoast. A full-scale training exercise called Frontier Sentinel will take place from June 9th to the 13th, focusing on maritime homeland security. The scenario will play out along the seacoast from the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard to the U.S. Coast Guard Station in Newcastle, according to Lieutenant Courtney Hilson of the 2nd Fleet Public Affairs Office. And there's links there for you to check out the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard and learn more about Frontier Sentinel. And you can even go to defendamerica.mil to learn more about the coordination of the U.S. and Canadian militaries coming soon to a town near you. An article from Steve Watson up on Infowars.net. White House has no information whatsoever on the hundreds of kidnapped and executed Americans in Mexico. The White House has declared that it has no info on any ongoing judicial processes concerning hundreds of kidnappings and murders of American citizens by Mexican drug cartels and gangs between 2005 and 2007. Cyber newscast service CNSNews.com specifically asked Press Secretary Dana Perino last Friday for information pertaining to a still-operative travel alert issued by the State Department, with a link for you, which warned travelers that violence equivalent to military small unit combat, and I link to the State Department, you can read that, was taking place along the southern U.S. border with Mexico. Jumping to secrecy news, FAS.org, fusion centers face insufficient terrorist activity. We've talked about fusion centers before, and there's links for you to learn a little bit more about it, but from Secrecy News, fusion centers are collaborative law enforcement and intelligence organizations that were established all over the country after 9/11 to share intelligence and counterterrorism information, and of course to build massive warrantless wiretapping databases. But in the absence of a widespread domestic terrorist threat, they have not consistently demonstrated their value, according to a recent study. Fusion centers emerged almost spontaneously, sure, in response to a need by state and local law enforcement for useful and usable intelligence related to the evolving terrorist threat, observed Milton Nineman, a Sacramento police officer in a master's thesis based on a survey of California fusion centers. And there's a link for you, and you can download his master's thesis in PDF. But the terrorist threat has turned out to be insufficient to justify or sustain the new fusion centers. Now, an editor's note from InfoWars, as we've told the reader of InfoWars for some time, there is no Al-Qaeda and there is no terrorist threat to speak of in the homeland. Maybe that's why Newt Gingrich recently stated at a New York bookstore that there should be reminder terrorist attacks in America to get Americans back in the habit of jumping at shadows or looking under their beds. Of course, post-9/11 fusion centers will not be closed down as a result. Instead, they will be used to go after another sort of terrorist, the kind involved in domestic crime. But then, naturally, this is what the government had in mind all along. And of course, as the quote previously said, they just seem to almost spontaneously pop up. Yeah, almost spontaneously, like the pre-written Patriot Act just happened to appear after 9/11. Last bit of news on this police state tech roundup here. New technology lets LA cops see through walls.
There appears to be one person right at the door. The two hostages are probably standing together and that the primary suspect's at that door. Cross them.
This is a training exercise for the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department, specifically the SWAT team.
We've got two people right here, 12 feet inside the room.
Don't say a word.
The suspect is at the two-side window looking east.
The scenario, multiple hostages inside this building. In a real scenario, this would be intense, with life and death consequences, and every single bit of information would be crucial.
The stuff that's the most valuable to us is where people are in the room, if there are people in the room, where are they located, are they moving, are they sitting, are they working together, are they working separately.
But can this technology help answer those questions? Commander Sid Hale believes yes.
It's a big deal.
You see, this technology sees through walls.
That's a person. You see how stationary they are? They're either leaning against the wall or sitting on something.
It works like this. A portable antenna is placed 3 to 30 feet outside a building. Radar then bounces off objects and people on the other side of the wall and sends that information to a laptop computer.
This one right here is looking straight in, just as if you were standing there looking through an invisible wall. This is how it would look, is if you're looking from the top down.
How does it give you a leg up? How does it change the situation for you?
Well, traditionally, the only way to be able to see inside the room is actually be inside the room. Things like windows and doors are usually barricaded or covered up by suspects.
The radar detects even the slightest movement, like breathing, and that helps to distinguish people from objects, like furniture. Tactical training combined with experience allows law enforcement to figure out the gunman from the hostage.
There are certain behaviors that are manifested by suspects as opposed to hostages that are so distinguishing that we can be able to tell one from the other.
And tracking the suspect could help the SWAT team determine when and how to approach the building.
Most of the time when you do an entry, where we get shot and where the shootings occur is within the first few seconds, and it's at the door. We will now, for the first time, have an ability of creating what's called an unopposed entry, which means that we'll just go where the suspect's not.
Today, this SWAT team is getting a run-through on this equipment for the first time.
It gives you an indication or a location where they're at in the house, so you can shrink your problem down to one room as opposed to having to deal with the whole house.
Even so, they are still a bit skeptical.
So you don't really rely on this technology by itself?
No, just a tool.
As a former SWAT commander, Hale agrees.
How we see this is augmenting everything else we've got, the spike mics and the under-the-wall cameras and visual observation with binoculars and spotting scopes and everything else.
This has limitations.
The antenna's big, wires. So eventually, as we get more and more sophisticated, we can see this being smaller, lighter weight.
This kind of criticism is invaluable to the manufacturer, Camaro.
We've worked with these guys for a while now, two different teams of the organization. We've taken their feedback and we're in the process of implementing it now.
And of course, there is always a question about money.
Right now, they're probably over $100,000.
And it's worth it?
It'll be worth it the first time we save somebody's life.
I'm Colleen Williams for NBC News.
So Los Angeles, which Morrissey about a year or so ago referred to as being a police state, now the cops can see through your walls. And that full video is linked up on MediaMonarchy.com. Moving now to the latest episode of Collateral News, available up on YouTube under Collateral News. Their latest episode is number 44, and asking the question, the end of food?
New York City, in the year 2022. Nothing runs anymore. Nothing works. But the people are the same. And the people will do anything to get what they need.
Gasoline prices have doubled in 3 years in the United States. But what if the same thing happened for food? It's already started to. And according to author Paul Roberts, much worse is looming. Welcome to Collateral.
A street protest against rising food costs recently turned violent in the Haitian capital Port-au-Prince, as well as in cities in other developing countries.
Paul Roberts authored The End of Oil, foretelling the end of the era of cheap, affordable fossil fuels. Now, Roberts and others are forecasting the end of food, by which is meant the end of a system that provided varied, abundant, high-quality, and safe food on a mass scale. The problem that's coming is starkly illustrated by the following out-of-whack equation. The U.S. food system consumes 10 times more energy than it produces in food energy. Up until last century, all the available food energy was derived from the sun through photosynthesis.
Either you ate plants or you ate animals that fed on plants, but the energy in your food was ultimately derived from the sun. But with the industrialization of agriculture, an era of exponential growth in the production of food started. But it was an era bound to end when the system's inputs came under great strain. That's what's happening now. As Roberts and others note, cheap energy is rapidly depleting, water shortages are becoming common, climate change is drying the earth, and a century of industrial farming has eroded topsoil and stripped much of what's left of its nutritional capacity. Just as importantly, there is no scalable replacement to the current system ready to plug in.
The change that's coming is going to affect billions of people and dramatically change the way we think about food over the next half century. Along the way, life will change in the most vulnerable places much sooner. Like Las Vegas? You might want to get there soon if you do, because in 20 years, there's a good chance it might be headed toward ghost town status. Projections show that Lake Mead, the reservoir that supplies water to Las Vegas and many other places in the Southwest, stands a 50% chance of becoming dry by 2021. The Colorado River system, which waters large portions of the Southwest, is already taxed beyond sustainability. With the affluent classes still swaddled in comfort, there's a tendency to dismiss talk of a coming crisis as alarmist. But the numbers don't lie. And when newly affluent populations in places like China and India begin flexing their buying power, scarcity may drive prices beyond what ordinary people can afford. So what can we do? Well, first, we can start by taking responsibility for what we buy. When you buy food, ask yourself, where did this come from? How did it get to me? And in particular, what am I agreeing to implicitly by buying this? Second, you'll notice more and more people raising gardens and participating in community-based food production. This is the healthiest way for change to come, from the ground up. From us, the former consumers of mass-produced food. It's the most sensible solution to one of the most striking paradoxes of our time. In a land of great affluence, where parents buy their children state-of-the-art baby seats and spend thousands of dollars child-proofing their homes, those same parents are completely dependent for their food on a corporate system that's largely invisible to them and which they don't understand. People treat the system like it'll always be there, but it can't be, and it won't. Hope to see you next week.
That was episode 44 of Collateral News, The End of Food. And now it's just an easy jump over from food to drugs. This coming from St. Louis Dispatch by way of roguegovernment.com. Decriminalizing drugs would save $46 billion. American taxpayers would save more than $46 billion if drug addicts now in prison were instead treated, according to a study released Friday at a national convention of drug court professionals. Retired Army General Barry McCaffrey, who of course features in Kevin Booth's fantastic documentary American Drug War, a former U.S. drug czar, and actress Melanie Griffith, joined experts in calling on lawmakers to increase funding for such courts. "This is not a war on drugs," McCaffrey said. "This is a problem for our families in America." And of course it is, but giving people treatment does not feed the monster of private, run-for-profit prison industrial complex. Jump into a little bit more disgusting police state news. This under the heading, Bad Cops, Soldiers, Drugs, and Crime, up on MediaMonarchy.com. First from the AP, two Miami officers charged in an FBI corruption probe. Two veteran police officers were charged last Friday with providing protection for purported shipments of cocaine and stolen goods in what was actually an undercover FBI op.
Also tonight, two City of Miami police officers are out of federal prison. They were busted for providing protection for shipments of cocaine, and that's not all. CBS4's David Sutter is live at Miami Police Headquarters with more. David.
Yeah, they're also accused of trying to traffic some stolen goods. It turns out they weren't stolen goods after all. It's actually pretty sad. If these allegations are true, these officers traded their jobs, their careers, and the rest of their lives, possibly, for a few thousand dollars.
Although, can you say that you are innocent, sir?
Yes. Two veterans of the Miami Police Department walked out of federal court Friday night, relieved of their jobs.
Did you betray the trust of the public, though?
I can't comment right now. This time I may compromise my case.
Giovanni Nunez and George Hernandez, accused by the FBI of being dirty cops.
Nothing to say, please. Enough.
Agents say over the course of 8 months, the two were videotaped as they allegedly took $40,000 in cash kickbacks to escort truckloads of stolen goods and cocaine. The protection done in marked and unmarked police cruisers on and off the clock. It turns out the drugs were a sham. The man who hired them, an undercover FBI agent. Miami Police Chief John Timoney, not surprised by the arrest.
It came as no surprise to us. He had been on our radar screen for a while.
I will be vindicated in this case. And Chief Timoney has to worry about his own investigations. Because he's got a handful.
Today. He said he wasn't surprised that this happened to you at all. What do you say to that?
Well, he has his own investigations that he has to worry about. including the vote of no confidence by the officers that really can't stand him. So if I were him, I wouldn't be throwing rocks at the glass house.
Nunez's employee file is fairly clean. However, his counterpart is not. Over a 13-year career, George Hernandez has been cited for serious charges, docked weeks of pay, yet somehow managed to keep his job until today. The two officers become the fourth and fifth from the department to be arrested in the last 3 months. Your attorney said that this was entrapment. Do you believe that?
I can't comment right now. I'm sorry.
There you go. Crooked cops. And now let's jump over to some shady soldiers. This from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution by way of military.com. Soldiers caught in robbery scheme. Four U.S. Army soldiers who were caught planning a commando-style armed robbery of a purported drug stash house are preparing to plead guilty for their roles in the incident, according to court records and lawyers for the servicemen. The four soldiers from the Camp Frank D. Merrill Mountain Training Facility in Dahlonega initially were charged with drug conspiracy and weapon offenses after being arrested in January. If convicted, they each face mandatory minimum prison sentences of at least 15 years. And you can link over to read about Camp Frank D. Merrill Mountain Training Facility thanks to globalsecurity.org. Jumping on to the corrupt city of Chicago, run by the son of a mobbed-up mayor. Corruption among Chicago cops, this coming from Reuters. A former Chicago police officer charged with being part of a ring that falsely arrested and stole from drug dealers has detailed how the operation led to a plot to kill two colleagues. This all according to interview excerpts released last Friday. Now, of course, when you see that they're stealing from drug dealers, it's probably because they didn't pay their cut. If we jump to BlueRidgeNow.com, border agents worked on the dark side. The Villarreal investigation, that's V-I-L-L-A-R-R-E-A-L, and that's a last name. The Villarreal investigation is among scores of corruption cases in recent years that have alarmed officials in the Homeland Security Department, just as it is hiring thousands of border agents to stem the flow of illegal immigration. The pattern has become familiar. Customs officers wave in vehicles filled with illegal immigrants, drugs, or other contraband. A Border Patrol agent acts as a scout for smugglers. Trusted officers fall prey to temptation and begin taking bribes. Like I said, that's on BlueRidgeNow.com. You can read more about the Villarreal case. But let's move to, finally, the StarTribune.com. Minnesota cops can take your blood without a warrant. When authorities have reason to believe that a drunken driver has caused a serious or fatal accident, they have a right to draw the driver's blood to test its alcohol content without their consent and without a search warrant. The Minnesota Supreme Court ruled last Friday with a link to the PDF of their ruling. The ruling was greeted with relief by law enforcers because you give an inch and they're going to take a mile. So what starts out as being for drunk crashes is just going to be for anybody. So the cops are going to start taking your blood. If we jump over to The Guardian, and from their great investigative reporter Duncan Campbell, who of course did his homework to find out that of course our current president's grandfather was profiteering from the Nazis, at the very least. Duncan Campbell has a new report on The Guardian, U.S. accused of holding terror suspects on prison ships. The U.S. is operating, quote, floating prisons to house those arrested in its war on terror, according to human rights lawyers, who claim there's been an attempt to conceal the numbers and whereabouts of detainees. Details of ships where detainees have been held and sites allegedly being used in countries across the world have been compiled as the debate over detention without trial intensifies on both sides of the Atlantic. The U.S. government was urged, to list the names and whereabouts of all those detained. Let's hold our breath for that. CIA black sites are also believed to have been operated or being operated in Thailand, Afghanistan, Poland, Romania. In addition, numerous prisoners have been extraordinarily rendered. That's a euphemism, my friends, for kidnapped. Just as pressure or an interrogation is a euphemism for torture. In addition, numerous prisoners have been extraordinarily rendered to U.S. allies and are alleged to have been tortured in secret prisons in countries such as Syria, Jordan, Morocco, and Egypt. So there you go. Moving to CBS News and Raw Story and their video site, Raw Replay. Pentagon's ray gun tested on mock protesters, but it's, of course, just a test because they're going to wait to roll it out when you get uppity, when you realize your bank account isn't there, or when maybe your favorite political candidate is removed from the scene, or whatever else is going to make you take to the streets and get uppity, they're going to bust out the pain ray, my friends, the active denial system. So let's hear how fucking funny it is from 60 Minutes about the Pentagon's ray gun.
What if we told you the Pentagon has a ray gun? And what if we told you it can stop a person in his tracks without killing or even injuring him? Well, it's true. You can't see it, you can't hear it, but I can tell you firsthand, you feel it. As we reported in March, Pentagon officials call it a major breakthrough, which could change the rules of war and save huge numbers of lives in Iraq. But it's still not there. That's because in the middle of a war, the military just can't bring itself to trust a weapon that doesn't kill.
It's a gun that doesn't look anything like a gun. It's that flat dish antenna which shoots out a 100,000 watt beam at the speed of light, hitting anything in its path with an intense blast of heat.
Roger, I'm ready for 100% shot, 2 seconds on the CLT.
That's what happens when the electromagnetic beam made up of very high frequency radio waves takes on that blackboard. The operator uses a joystick to zero in on a target. The effect is instant, but visible only with an infrared camera and seen on this laptop.
Engage.
The ray gun fires, and there it is, that flash of white-hot energy.
We are now stepping into the Buck Rogers scenario.
Buck Rogers, this is a ray gun.
This is, for all intents and purposes, a ray gun.
Colonel Kirk Himes is in charge of the ray gun, which is being tested at Moody Air Force Base in South Georgia.
Go!
Targets here are people, military volunteers creating a scenario soldiers might encounter in Iraq. Angry protesters advancing on American troops who have to choose between backing down or opening fire. Off in the distance, a half mile away, the operator of the ray gun has the crowd in his sights. Unlike the soldiers on the ground, he has no qualms about firing away because his weapon won't injure anyone. He squeezes off a blast.
Get out of here!
The first shot hits like an invisible punch.
Get out of here! We're not leaving! The
protesters regroup, and he fires again. And again. Finally, they've had enough. The ray gun drives them away with no harm done. Official called the active denial system. It does penetrate the body, but just barely.
So what happens when that beam hits me?
It's absorbed in the top layer, 1/64th of an inch, which is about 3 sheets of paper that you'd find in your printer.
And it's hitting what inside that 1/64th of an inch?
Right within that 1/64th of an inch is where the nerve endings are.
You have to feel the ray gun to believe it, and there's only one way to do that.
Engage, engage.
Me, it felt like scalding water.
What makes this a weapon like no other is that it makes you instantly stop whatever you're doing, but the second you get out of the beam, the pain vanishes, and as long as it's been used properly, there's no harm to your body.
Huge breakthrough, huge game changer.
Sue Payton is an assistant secretary of the Air Force and the Pentagon official in charge of buying the ray gun.
We have warfighters that are in harm's way. And you know they don't want to kill innocent people. You pick between a bullet or a bullhorn, not a good choice.
Peyton's close encounter with a ray gun was 2 years ago. She was a big shot from the Pentagon, so they dialed down the power of the beam.
That'll teach them.
Peyton was having none of that.
Bring it up!
She wanted a full blast, and she got it.
What did you think of the system?
I loved it. I started giggling.
Giggle is not the usual response to pain.
Well, I giggled after I got zapped. And you giggle because you realize that you're okay. And you realize that it had the effect that we want it to have.
I think I've lost track of how many times I've played clips of them displaying their pain ray, their goodbye weapon, their active denial system. I've lost track of how many clips I've played, but that's interesting because it just shows that they keep introducing it to you. They are getting you used to the idea of seeing this weapon. Now, what's interesting in what they said at the very beginning on the intro of the piece is that it's not actually in Iraq yet because it doesn't kill people. And, of course, they can't use that if it doesn't kill people, but the ADS, the active denial system, as I've said, every time I've played clips or read news stories about this pain ray, coming soon to a demonstration near you. Finally, my friends, on this 78th episode of MediaMonarchy.com, does the White House have a secret laser defense? And this coming from the Danger Room blog over on Wired, there are all kinds of stories about how the White House is defended. One urban legend says Stinger aircraft, or rather Stinger anti-aircraft missiles, are supposedly perched on the roof. According to this 1998 report, with a link for you by Human Rights Watch, Pennsylvania Avenue may be protected by a laser weapon meant to ward off 9/11-style suicide attacks. Huh, so that's a 98 report, but I thought no one ever could have imagined that anyone would use airplanes as weapons. Which is bullshit, of course, as we know, they ran drills with hijacked jets crashing into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, both before and during 9/11. But returning to the article, the latest version is the Compact High Power Laser Dazzler, CHP, described as a 500 milliwatt, 532 nm green flashing laser. As with World War II dazzling strobe lights, with a link for you, the flashing is said to increase effectiveness and produce disorientation in the target. It's effective out to a 1 mile range and has been urgently requested in Iraq as an alternative to lethal means of stopping drivers approaching checkpoints. And there's a link for you there because a couple months ago over on Danger Room, they were showing the use of the laser dazzler. Basically, it looked exactly like a first-person shooter video game, which is the idea of first-person shooter video games to get you used to the idea of impulsively pulling the trigger on anything that moves. It shows the driver blasting anything coming in his way with a laser dazzler, and it basically, of course, disorients people on bikes, and they fall off and wreck, and cars veer off the road, but it's non-lethal. Except, of course, if you have a car crash. Last paragraph of the article, we do not know whether the Secret Service had such lasers to protect the White House on 9/11, or if they have them now, but there's a link there to read about the Secret Service requesting them, at least. Beyond the 98 report from Human Rights Watch, there's not much evidence, but we do know that in 2001, the makers were touting a bigger version of their Dazzler to the Navy. It was 10 times as powerful as the handheld model and was suitable for use on ships and other area defense situations. And that's going to do it, my friends, for this all-important 78th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. June 6th, 2008. My name's James. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, coming to you every Friday morning live at 10 a.m. Pacific Time from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, and Sunday nights at 7 Eastern Time on revereradionetwork.com. And you can, of course, hit me up on MySpace and Dig and YouTube and Yahoo with Media Monarchy as your keyword. And you can also get the podcast anytime thanks to iTunes, radioforall.net, and archive.org. Finally, as I like to do on these shows that I've been doing it for quite some time now, I'm also, you should know, including this list of people who visit the site and what they searched for and how they landed there. I'm including that in the show notes posted up on archive.org and radioforall.net. So you can look at these and check them out for yourself. I even include some of the ISPs and IPs as well. So, in the last week, some of the interesting visitors coming to MediaMonarchy.com, we had the Parliament of Finland, after they googled Estalin Guns Butter MP3, which, of course, they were looking for an interview with Daniel Estalin, author of The Bilderberg Group, with his interview on Guns and Butter. Next, we had Yale University. They were reading about how China is hushing up all the deaths surrounding their rush to build all the facilities for the Olympics coming up. We had Siemens out of Marionette, Wisconsin. They googled Bush seeding clouds. And of course, you know, cloud seeding is a rudimentary form of weather control. We know, of course, there are far, far, far more advanced means of weather control, like HARP, HAARP. And possibly soon on MeetingMonarchy.com, we'll get into some of the speculations about the recent earthquake in China and some of the strange sightings and videos that are out there. If you want to check it out ahead of me, you can look up strange clouds 10 minutes before China earthquake, and it basically looks like the Aurora Borealis in the sky. But moving on, we also had Colliers. We had the Yeshiva University of California. They Googled Obama AIPAC. We had the Oregon Health and Science University, OHSU, here in Oregon. We also had the USACE.Army.mil headquarters of the USAAISC. Not sure exactly what that is, but the ISP is there for you. Ohio parents told about the school that exploded, but it was a drill. We went over that last week. CBS Corporation out of New York City, we're reading about the Silver Bridge disaster in West Virginia. The CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, hit me up from a link on blacklistednews.com. We had the Loudoun County Department of Information Technology in Ashburn, Virginia. They Googled Immortal Technique, Angel of Death, Embed Code. We had the Hard Rock Cafe in Dublin Google Government discredits Truth Movement. We had the Australian Department of Defense, defense.gov.au. They Googled Severe Visibility, and that's the fictional film about the cover-up of 9/11. We had the Navy Network Information Center out of Hawaii, hawaii.nmci.navy.mil. They Googled Operation Maple Flag, which, of course, was the joint operations going on between Canada and the U.S. and other countries. War games, my friends. We had the U.S. Department of State, state.gov. They Googled Obama, Clinton, McCain joined forces to form Nightmare Ticket. We did that last week from The Onion. We had the University of Toronto Googled AIPAC and Obama. We had the New York City Transit Authority Google AIPAC and Obama. Got a lot of links from people Googling some variation of AIPAC and Obama as they're learning about. What are they learning about? You can figure it out. Why don't you Google AIPAC and Obama? But a blog called PalestinianPundit.blogspot.com, they linked to my story from a few months ago, Why Obama Can't Save Us. And that got lots and lots of traffic to MediaMonarchy.com. A couple visits from our good friends at the Drug Enforcement Agency. We also had the FAA, Federal Aviation Administration, out of Oklahoma City, Googled suing Boeing 9/11. And, of course, reading about how Boeing and other companies are suing the government for redress. And finally, we had the Monmouth.Army.mil, USAISC, CECOM in Fort Belvoir, Virginia. They Googled freebies, 9/11's a lie, which we just heard a little while ago, my friends. And that's going to do it for this week's list of creepy visitors to MediaMonarchy.com. If you're a creepy visitor to MediaMonarchy.com, I thank you, and I hope you will spread the word and keep downloading the podcast and keep telling people about it. As I've said again and again and again, I got kind of a knot in my stomach about the next several months, my friends. We're going to see some kind of surprises, whether it's an October surprise, who knows. But I'll let you know about it on MediaMonarchy.com. As I did a few days ago, I posted up episode 77B. And so with all the news spilling out, and as I try and get into using my new Mac and making podcasts at home by myself, keep your eyes and ears peeled for Media Monarchy episode 78, the B-side, which you won't hear on Revere or PRA. You'll have to get it from MediaMonarchy.com. So that's going to do it, my friends. I love you. My name's James. It's MediaMonarchy.com episode 78. Like my man Webster Tarpley says, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
along with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.